The Return of the King, the last installment of the Lord of the Rings film trilogy, opens next week. The series is now a financial juggernaut, but there was no guarantee of that when a small studio and an untested director joined forces on a quest to make three films in one gigantic production. NPR's Kim Masters reports.
The most unlikely plot twist in the Lord of the Rings saga could be that the film version ever got made. The obstacles that director Peter Jackson faced seem about as formidable as those that bedevil the characters in J.R.R. Tolkien's tale.
The quest stands upon the edge of a knife. Stray but a little and it will fail.
As nearly everyone knows, the Lord of the Rings trilogy tells of the struggle of two little hobbits to drop an evil ring into a heavily guarded pit of fire. It's all set amid a fantastical world of elves, wizards, and dwarves. Transforming this world into three films that would be made simultaneously was a risk that only one studio would even consider, the small and struggling New Line Cinema. In what might be the greatest gamble in movie history, New Line bet the company. It agreed to spend $300 million on the three films. Director Peter Jackson.
It was such a gamble that it defies common sense, really. You know, in many respects, it should never have happened.
Backing Jackson as the director was another risky decision. Jackson got good reviews for his 1994 art film, Heavenly Creatures, the true tale of a sensational murder committed by two teenaged girls in the 1950s. But Jackson's biggest budget film to date had been The Frighteners, which cost about $30 million and bombed. That's a bit less than the tab for the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which grew to about $400 million. New Line's Mark Ordesky says the company faced a lot of skepticism.
The whole film has been marked by a sort of, this can't be done, you guys are crazy, it's too big a risk, you're all going to die.
In October 1999, Peter Jackson started an arduous 15-month shoot. Movies aren't usually shot in any kind of narrative order, but this project involved an unprecedented amount of jumping around, as Peter Jackson explains.
We're shooting three movies back to back, three movies out of sequence in actual fact, so it wasn't like you shot one and then two and then three during that period, you shot them all out of order. So we'd be shooting Two Towers in the morning, Return of the King in the afternoon, then the next day we'd be doing a bit of Fellowship of the Ring, and then we'd be going, jumping all over the place.
The plan was a challenge even for a veteran actor like Ian McKellen. He plays Gandalf, the wizard.
It was a little alarming. For instance, on the very first day of shooting, I was done up as Gandalf the Grey, arriving in Hobbiton for the first time, my first scene in the first movie. And 3 days later, I filmed the very last scene as Gandalf the White in the third film. Well, I had no idea what had happened in the intervening three films.
Sean Astin is Samwise Gamgee, the improbable hero who is steadfastly loyal to troubled ring-bearer Frodo Baggins. Astin remembers that he and co-star Elijah Wood had to play a key scene from the third movie shortly after they started work on the project. The emotional confrontation takes place on a dark ledge.
They got some polystyrene rocks and they found a squash court at a like Ramada Inn-type hotel, and they built the ledge of Cirith Ungol on this with blue screens, and I remember Elijah and I turning up that day, and I was like, well, are we ready to go to the third minute? We're only 2 months in, we're not ready, you know, and we did it.
But they didn't finish it. The two actors went on to film other scenes.
We didn't get back down to that squash court for like a year, and so we did Elijah's close-ups for that scene a year later. And then 3 years later, this summer, 2003, we were down there, and we did another moment or two to add into it. So when you see the scene, it's hard to tell, but basically you're watching sort of this amalgamation of 4 years worth of work.
The computer made that scene possible and it enabled Jackson to create epic battles teeming with monsters and magical creatures. He spent long months laboring with his effects team over sequences that involved a kind of virtual painting as much as filming.
When you see a shot in the movie, you know, a computer shot, that's not like the first time that they did it. That's usually the 20th time that it was done, and they start doing it, and then you just critique it, and you send it back, and you say, add a bit more dust, give me a bit of sun rays coming through the clouds, can we have the shadows can be a bit darker, please? You know, you keep sort of asking for improvements.
Eventually, Jackson put together a rough cut of the first film, The Fellowship of the Ring. That's when he got scared.
The first time you cut it, it's always the worst version of the film you're ever going to see. It's too long, it's too kind of flabby, it doesn't really work because it hasn't been shaped properly, and there is a moment of panic that always comes in, thinking, oh, it's possible I've just made the worst film ever.
But when Ian McKellen saw the movie, he knew it would be a hit.
I knew the first film would be a success because after about 5 minutes I forgot I was in it. And I thought, well, if I'm enjoying it, knowing how it was done and the difficulties at times of filming, then I know an innocent audience is going to like it even more.
McKellen was right. The first film got rapturous reviews and grossed more than $850 million worldwide. But the audience wasn't quite innocent. The Fellowship of the Ring arrived in theaters just 2 months after the September 11th attacks. To Sean Astin, the film's theme of the struggle between good and evil seemed especially relevant.
And that speech that Gandalf gives kind of resonates even more. That was in there in the first one, where he says to Frodo, ours is not to question sort of what happens to us, but just to figure out what to do with the time we're given, or something like that.
I wish none of this had happened.
So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us.
In the wake of the attacks, Astin also saw particular meaning in lines that were written for his character.
I got this speech at the end of the second movie that was an answer to the kind of question of the moment. Can movies be meaningful anymore? They kind of paid this homage to Tolkien and to movies in general with this speech they wrote for me to say, it's like the great tales, Mr. Frodo. It's the ones that really mattered.
Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something.
Screenwriter Philippa Boyens also remembers that speech.
What we were trying to actually say there was, yes, it is an incredibly dark time in the world, and you have to hold on to a belief that there is good in this world. And actually, it does not mean that that's ever going to be proved. That's the next part of that sentiment, which is ordinary people hold on to that belief without any proof, often, just faith.
For executives at New Line, the making of the Lord of the Rings trilogy began as an exercise in faith. They saved their company and made movies that audiences all over the world embraced. They have irrefutable proof that in this case, at least, their faith was not misplaced. Kim Masters, NPR News, Los Angeles.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.